Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Dorsey.
I'm J. Greg Danny.
It's July 11th, 2018, and this is our podcast for the week. And it's already kind of winding. It feels like it's winding down.
It's only July, mid-July.
When I look at this weather service that I belong to, we should be cooling off now.
Amen.
For the rest of the summer, into the fall, through the winter. It's going to be a cold winter.
Get ready.
Take it to the bank.
Okay. I like the cool summer. Cool summer sounds good. Cold winter, I'm not crazy about.
Cool summer. We've seen the heat.
We'll deal with that in a little while.
We've seen the maximum heat so far.
That's good.
In the market, though.
In the market.
What's hot? What's not?
What is hot in the market? You know, it's interesting. Today is an interesting time period in history. If you go back 10 years ago today, July 11th of 2008, we saw a very interesting thing happen for crude oil.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
Crude oil peaked.
I know what it was.
Crude oil peaked. Crude oil, for the first time ever, touched $147 a barrel in July of 2008. July 11th is the day it hit $147 a barrel, which is crazy to think. I mean, today we've seen, right now, crude oil sitting at about $75 a barrel. And that's up massively off its lows of $27 a barrel, the recent lows from back in 2016. And so despite the fact that crude oil has rallied quite a bit over the past couple of years, which, you know, a lot of the energy names have certainly rallied along with it, crude oil from its peak 10 years ago is still down almost 50% from its peak in 2008.
I want you to look up on the computer now for inflation-adjusted oil price. I'm talking to one of our interns that's in here with us. Let's just see what the inflation adjusted would be.
And maybe current prices?
Current prices, yeah. Okay. Inflation adjusted.
Yeah.
Would we find it is maybe at a new high? I don't know.
That's a good question. Currently right now it's $75.
Google should know.
Google would know off the top of their head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or Siri. Or Alexa.
Any of those would. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. You think back to 2008 and you think, gosh, what a terrible market 2008 was, which it was.
Let me try it. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let's see what happens here. I'm going to Siri. Siri, what is the price of oil inflation? Oh, I didn't do it right. Inflation adjusted price of oil. Siri, what's the inflation adjusted price of oil? Let's see if she knows. And she came right up there and gave me a chart. I mean, it's so interesting technology. I mean, I don't use Siri enough or Alexa enough, but here is, I think you already had that chart. You were looking at that chart.
I was looking at it, but it was only updated through July of 2017.
Okay, so where are
which
we today?
July of 2017, that's when crude was only $43 a barrel, but the inflation adjusted price was still basically right there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So inflation-adjusted oil is still low.
Inflation-adjusted oil is still relatively low. It looks like that red line goes down, and the inflation-adjusted price is pretty close to actual nominal price.
Interesting, because I remember back in 1975... So in essence, what we're saying is that the investing public really hasn't glommed onto oil yet,
right?
As something to trade, because back in 1975, when I became a stockbroker at Merrill Lynch, we were going through the oil embargo back then, and that's back when you had to have your odd license plate would have a day to get gas, your even license plate would have a day to get gas. So if you began with odd or began with even, I'm not sure how it worked exactly. But that was interesting, and all investors wanted to do was buy oil stocks. Mm. Houston Oil and Minerals was the play. That's what we loved, and Mesa Petroleum. Anything that was oil-related, that's what people traded.
Yeah.
Is that going to happen again?
That's a good question.
Well, look at some of those oil stocks.
Yeah.
Take a look at the dogs of the Dow. Dogs of the Dow, which is something that I do every year, and I would recommend everybody do every year. You know, I mean, it has a great track record, and it's a piece of the equation that you can have in your portfolio. It's got ExxonMobil, and it's got Chevron. Both of them about 4% yields.
Yeah.
And look at the charts of those two, Exxon and Chevron.
Look great.
These are big companies. These aren't fly-by-night stuff. And then what you want to do is pull up the ETF. What was that one?
XLE.
XLE.
Yeah, XLE is the Energy Select Sector Spider Fund, which is, you know, the biggest energy ETF out there that owns Exxon and Chevron are the two biggest weightings inside of that ETF.
Exxon is 22.9% and Chevron 16.79%. Yeah. Look at their charts. So the ETF would be a way of getting diversification. Yeah. I think this is becoming so interesting when you look at some of these oil stocks. Man, many people are missing the boat, especially if you're looking for income.
Yeah, you look at a lot of the, you mentioned a lot of the energy names carry decent dividend yields along with them. And it's easy within the system if you're looking at Exxon or any oil stock in particular, you can click on the left-hand side there and look at the relative strength matrix of that particular sector and see where those stocks rank, and then get a whole matrix ranking of all the stocks that we have in the oil sector. Or if you're looking at oil service names, you can do the same thing for some of the oil service names. If you just pull up the chart of any one of them, and on the left-hand side, you'll see a link there that says sector matrix. You can click on that sector matrix link and look at some ideas there.
And if you pull up the ETF on our charts, on the left-hand side, it says holdings. You can see exactly what percentage there of the index is holding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, we were looking back and thinking, geez, you know, right now in the market and going back to 2008 for a minute, and you think crude oil at the beginning of 2008, the first half of 2008, I mean, it hit $147 a barrel in July. But for the first half of 2008, the S&P 500 was down 13% through the first half of 2008. Crude oil itself was up 46%. The energy ETF, that XLE, was actually up 10%. If you go back the first half of 2008, the only thing that was working was commodity-related stuff, energy and materials during that time period. Now, the back half of 2008, they became correlated with everything else and went straight down the tubes as well. Right. But that's where...
I showed you modern portfolio theory.
That's right.
Is not correct.
That's right, because things can and will be correlated at the same time, and that's the exact time that you don't want to have exposure to them. But it's interesting when you go back and you look at the Dolly asset class rankings, or dynamic asset level investing asset class rankings from 2008. And starting in January, commodities was the number one ranked asset class in Dolly and stayed number one until mid-August of 2008. So for the entire first half of 2008, what Dolly was saying is you need to own commodities, i.e. crude oil and energy stocks during that time period.
And Dolly, for those of you who aren't familiar with us, are dynamic asset level investing, which takes the asset classes and shows where we should be.
Yeah.
Well, Yogi Berra once said something about this.
Yeah?
What did he say?
He was a wise man. Had lots of
good... He was a wise man. Yogi Berra, the catcher, baseball catcher, said something about this.
The first thing that's coming to my head is you can learn a lot just by watching.
Exactly.
Did I get it right?
Exactly. You can observe a lot just by watching. And that's the whole idea with our website, is that these bring things to light. You can create all kinds of alerts to let you know what's beginning to happen here. And you look at, you know, I looked at my Dogs of the Dow last night, and I don't do it often because it's the end of the year. It's a year type of thing. And I look at the Dogs last night, and I noticed that I had forgotten what was in them. So I noticed ExxonMobil and Chevron. I said, oh, that's interesting. Not only have I got gains in them, but I've got good yield. I've got close to 4% yields. Now that adds up.
That adds up, no doubt. And that's twice. I mean, the S&P 500 yield is just south of 2%. It's about 2%. So you're getting double the yield than the S&P with some of those energy names.
So when you think about it, you know, we had a long conversation about should we, you know, do we want to work toward peace or war.
Mm.
You got to have war.
Mm.
And it's, and I know it sounds bad, but it's the kind of thing that brings everyone together. And I remember my son coming over to my house a couple months ago, Thomas, and we were talking about the world economics and the world situation, political situation. And he said, I'm worried about my young kids and terrorism and this type of thing. I said, don't worry about that. I said, we have to have that. That's what makes it all happen. And if you go back to when I started this business 43 years ago, I said, Thomas, I said, if you bought the Dow Jones, it would be around 500. I said, today it's 25,000. So he said, in the S&P 500, we trust them. I said, exactly that. So I had some T-shirts made.
Yeah, that's right.
In the S&P 500, we trust. And he's exactly right. So at some point in time, your kids, and maybe even you, and our intern sitting over here, definitely him, will see the Dow Jones at 50,000.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right.
I think there's no question about it. And the more strife in the world, the more it happens. I mean, it's like the media does everything it can to gin up people scared. Stocks right now are so overvalued. These corporate buybacks are going to hurt the stock. And, you know, wait a minute. Why is the stock overvalued? How do they? You remember back in the dot-com days? They had to come up with this cockamamie concept of what was that way of looking fundamentally at these stocks? Because the fundamentals didn't work. The regular chartered financial analyst way of looking at them, certified fact assemblers, didn't work.
Right.
Pro forma.
Pro forma.
Pro forma earnings.
Yeah, that's right.
And everyone sat back and said, what the heck is pro forma? Well, it's just a new term that we had to come up with so that we could begin following these things fundamentally again. Because they had gone too far. Because
they had no fundamentals.
They had no earnings. They had nothing. All it was total hype. So when you look at the FANG stocks and you say, wow, let's look at, in fact, Chuck and I were just looking at these FANG stocks. Back during their heyday, they were up like 80% each year. And now they're up like 40% each year. So what has happened with that? It's just simple because back then it was all on the come. When you were an investor, it was like EMC has got storage. We're going to need storage forever. You know, you got to have more EM. Look at Cisco Systems. Cisco Systems was, that stock could really fly. You could come in today and buy Cisco Systems and have it up 30 points by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's an old state stock, pays a high dividend, doesn't move around much. It's good for mom and pop.
Yeah.
You know? And back then it was just a crazy situation. You had Yahoo. Yahoo was $700 a share. I remember writing an article to our clients on Yahoo that it's okay if you buy Yahoo at $700. Just be sure that you buy an odd lot. You can't buy 100 shares of it. You can't buy 1,000 shares of it. You buy 3 shares of it. You stay at your sleeping level.
Mm-hmm.
So now these all have come to fruition. What they were planning, what they were hoping in the future has come to fruition. Now they've slowed down. So the next something is going to come into existence. What's going to bring the Dow Jones up to 50,000? The next something, I don't know, maybe it's crypto.
Could be,
maybe something I haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, I mean, this guy is working every day to find something cool. He's got a great life.
Just dreams of flying to the moon, and he'll get there one day.
Exactly.
When, yeah, and today it's a lot, the new stuff that's coming up now is a lot of the themes of AI or artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. And right.
Robotics and that type of stuff. And who knows, maybe some of that stuff is where it's at.
When you look at robotics, the leaders in robotics is Japan.
Mm.
Why? Because they don't let people come into their country. And their country's getting older. Very, very old. I think probably 60% of them now are retired type people.
Okay.
They need help and they need care. Robots are doing it. So that's bringing us along the robotics and the AI. And it's going to be so interesting what's going on here. To me, it's just when you're my age and you can look back to the time when programming in school, you learn programming, you did the cards. You type cards. And you probably can't even picture this.
No.
Each card had a little hole in it. And you put them all together, and then you put it into this card file thing, and it had to read every one of them properly. If one was not typed right, it wouldn't do it. That was COBOL and Fortran programming back in 1970. Okay. Now, what do we have?
Yeah. So you were a programmer? You started out as a programmer?
No. I did not. I mean, that was really all foreign. It was all foreign to me. I just wanted business. I just said, okay, business is generalized enough.
Gotcha.
But fell in love with economics. So it's interesting conversation, but in the S&P 500, we trust.
Yeah. Well, you think about it, you know, over the past, take the past 10 years, 8 years, whatever it is, and you've had all of these different economic events. Right now it's trade wars. That's the news story. But you go back and you've had the
That's the new war.
You've had the fiscal cliff. You know, that was going to tear the market
down.
That
was it. Yeah, that was
the U.S. government shutdown. Market can't do anything if the government shuts down, right?
Right. No. Oh, God,
that's wrong. And, you know, these things are always out there to force you to do the exact wrong thing.
Exactly.
And to your point earlier, having an operating system to force you to do the right thing is, you know, more important now than ever.
Absolutely, because you can just you can observe a lot just by watching. You come to our system, you look at the system, and you can even with your track portfolio.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, your track portfolio. You can create your own model. And maybe you've worked on some things and you have ETFs, maybe 5, 10 ETFs. You can put them in there, and that will give you a symbol. You can't get that on anywhere else.
Right.
Only at Dorsey Wright.
Yeah.
But go to your track portfolio. Create your own model. You'll manage that model. If you're going to take something out, you'll take it out yourself and you'll put it in yourself. But you'll have a symbol for that, just like any other stock. So when you click performance, you can go back and do a test.
Yeah.
I would create your model, go to Sydney here, and say, let me pay you a couple $100 to go to back test this, and let's see how it has done. If you like what it does, create your own symbol. And there you have it. Now you can sit down with a client and a prospect, show them an actual chart of the model they're going to use.
That would be cool. And not getting that anywhere else?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I'm not sure what date it is this month. I'm going to do a webcast on relative strength.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes open. We'll let you know. I'm the last to know what day it's going
to be. We'll make sure you're here.
It's probably on there on the calendar already. But be sure that you tune into that because we'll talk about modeling and relative strength. And we had 1,100 come for basic point and figure.
Yeah. Yeah, this one will be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, we could sit here and talk all day about this stuff.
Good.
We'll go ahead and stop now, I guess.
Sounds good.
Okay. See you next week.